Today we're going to create a mashup, a fun and adventurous way to make something fresh out of something stale.
A local man feels even lazier when he thinks about how much ISIS has accomplished this year. A police officer doesn't see a difference between black and light-skinned black suspects. And a weak-willed termite eats a whole log in one sitting. Barreling forward on our scorched earth campaign towards truth and righteousness, this is the Onion Week in Review. This week, a new study charting the development of American school children found that the nation's third graders are now eating at a ninth grade level. Researchers cited evidence showing that the average 8-year-old in the U.S. currently consumes enough food during meals and snacking periods to equal a pubescent high school freshman, crediting both teachers' and parents' roles in their children's advanced eating habits. A new report released this week revealed that more parents than ever are relying on grandparents to help cook up their kids. The report's authors noted that in order to make ends meet, many budget-conscious parents in the U.S. have allowed their own parents to step in and deliver the same level of emotional neglect they would like to apply, adding that for many working adults, this arrangement was the only way to ensure their children were adequately belittled and ignored. And in this week's sports news, Johnny Manziel is forced to wear a Cleveland Browns jersey in a cruel rookie hazing incident. In other news, Busch Gardens unveils their new 9,600-mile-long endurance coaster. A documentary provides a scathing indictment of the director's filmmaking skills, and a man brings his son into the office to see where dad is emasculated. As a child, I often dreamed of becoming an astronaut or even president of the United States, but eventually gained the insight to recognize this as the only position of vital importance.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Injection, fellas.
You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound, a dimension of sight, a dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into...
I am learning to be grateful for each moment. But I am well aware that this today will very quickly join the history class full of yesterday, so friends, before it does, allow me to share something with you. Time. It can fly and promises to heal all of our wounds. We try to make it, save it, kill it, and there is never enough of it. Time is what stops everything from happening all at once. Making sense of past through to present into future, it's later and it's sooner. Time is what measures the duration of pain and of joy and of everything in between. It's awful, but it's lovely, it's gracious, and then it's mean. Time is like the wind. It lifts the light to float with it, while leaving the heavy to curse the rushing breeze. And I'm even convinced that time stops when you really have to sneeze. Time, it seems to rule all aspects of our lives and has been the endless fascination for every creed and nation throughout all of time. It seems to vary from place to place, but personally I have yet to face a space where it does not intermingle and interlace itself into everything. And the mysterious thing is that time is completely personal, but then entirely public. Each second ascribed solely to you. But that self-same moment is for the rest of us too, so it doesn't matter who you are or what you pursue, time does not discriminate, so do not misconstrue. We all face life at 60 minutes an hour. And then time seems to pester only man, because bird and bee seem so free from the tick-tock time bomb mentality that plagues you and me. You see, a hummingbird can flap its wings 90 times in a single second. Those wings are spun of silver, emerald, and gold, and these tiny little creatures are hearts to behold with angelic features and colors so bright they propel imagination to a new delight. And there is magic in the way that they flit through the sky. They appear, then they vanish in the blink of an eye. But if you think that's impressive, friend, then consider the fly. Because those buzzing buggers beat their wings more than 1,000 times a second. Now, I'm no fan of a fly, but none can deny that that is pretty impressive. But then it also makes sense. Because the average mayfly has a lifespan of little more than 30 minutes. And if I were ever limited to such extent, I could only ever be content by cramming every minute with 60 seconds well spent. And so that begs the question, how are you spending your time? Allow me to suggest that you stop. Stop waiting for some dream day when you'll get your fresh start. Let loose the wild things you keep locked up in your heart, and stop hoping to make it if you do nothing about trying, because we're all headed towards death. So what are you doing about dying? Stop talking about killing time. Well, time quietly kills you. Talk is cheap. And every second is as precious as life itself. And so, my friends, thank you for spending a little bit of your life on me.
Why would thousands of artifacts be ignored by mainstream archaeology? They show the unthinkable. Images of man battling with dinosaurs. Reptilian creatures interacting with men and women. Ancient inscriptions on stones depicting complex surgical procedures. And carved metallic spheres found in rock strata 2.8 billion years old. This evidence points to one conclusion, that the history of life on this planet may be radically different than what is accepted today.
Dinosaur species has been discovered. A group of international scientists have uncovered the remains of the unique carnivorous dinosaur in western Venezuela. The remains of a hip and tibia bone belonging to a Tachyraptor admirabili were uncovered after 20 years of investigation in western Venezuela. The roughly 1.5 meter long species is thought to have lived 200 million years ago.
It was a surprise when I took away the first rock from the site, and I touched the shin bone of a creature which was never seen before. Today it is with great pride I call it the Tachyraptor admirabili.
The scientists concluded that the species may have lived in the initial Jurassic phase and could have been the ancestor of the menacing Tyrannosaurus rex dinosaur. They are hopeful that further excavations in the formation made up of volcanic rocks may yield more fossil troves.
Archaeologists have discovered a large, detailed and colourful floor mosaic in an archaeological dig in the northern Greek town of Amphipolis. It covers the entire floor of the second chamber of the tomb and measures 3 by 4.5 metres. The mosaic is framed with a border of the ancient Greek symbol, the meander, in grey and blue painted stones. The finding depicts a chariot being drawn by two white horses, driven by a bearded man. The ancient Greek mythological god Hermes, with his winged helmet and sandals, is leading the chariot. Archaeologists have said that the detail of the piece is exquisite. Although the centre of the mosaic has been damaged, archaeologists have found the broken pieces and will attempt to put them back in place in the next few days. Last month, two tall sculpted statues of females on pedestals flanking the door of the second chamber were discovered. And the entrance of the tomb is also guarded by two marble sphinxes. £1 million discovery of Viking artifacts has been uncovered in southwest Scotland by an amateur treasure hunter and his trusty metal detector. Derek McLennan, a retired businessman from Ayrshire, stumbled across the massive collection after dragging himself from his sickbed to go on the trip with two friends. Now he's in line for a bumper payout after the find was described as one of the most significant of its kind ever discovered in the UK. In total, more than 100 items were recovered, including armbands and brooches. A solid silver cross, which has enamel decorations which experts consider to be highly unusual, was also amongst the collection. This pot is likely to have been around 100 years old when the hoard was buried in the mid-9th or 10th centuries. Within hours, experts from Historic Scotland had arrived at the field in Dumfries and Galloway to begin a major excavation of the site. The discovery comes after Lucky Derek hit the headlines earlier this year, after discovering 322 medieval coins in a field.
If you peered through a giant cosmic magnifying glass, you'd be able to spot a tiny faint galaxy, one of the furthest galaxies ever seen. Spotted by NASA's Hubble Space Telescope, the object is estimated to be more than 13 billion light-years away. The galaxy measures merely 850 light-years across, 500 times smaller than our Milky Way galaxy, and is estimated to have a mass of only 40 million suns. The Milky Way, in comparison, has a stellar mass of a few hundred billion suns. The galaxy is said to offer a peek back to the very early formative years of the universe and may just be the tip of the iceberg. It's suspected to be an underlying population of extremely small, faint objects that existed about 500 million years after the beginning of the universe. Scientists say the discovery is telling them galaxies as faint as this one exist, so they should continue looking for them and even fainter objects so that we can understand how galaxies in the universe have evolved over time.
Stars are in the blue, long as there's a spring of bird to sing, I'll go on loving you till the end of time. long as roses bloom in May. My love for you will grow deeper with every passing day, till the wells run dry and each mountain disappears. I'll be there for you to care for you through laughter and through tears. So take my heart in sweet surrender and tenderly say that I'm the one you love and live for till the end of time. Each mountain disappears. I'll be there for you to care for you through laughter and through tears. So take my heart in sweet surrender and tenderly say that I'm one you love and live for till the end of time.
Meet the all-new Asimo, the world's first advanced android. Asimo is the latest generation of Honda's humanoid robots, and it's making its UK debut next week. Honda claims the new robot is the world's first to have autonomous behaviour control technology, meaning the new Asimo can now continue to move without being controlled by an operator. And if that wasn't impressive enough, the robot has improved intelligence and the physical ability to adapt to situations, taking robots one step further into commercial everyday use. Asimo, which has been a developing project for Honda Robotics since 2000, has come a long way. It can now predict a direction a person is moving in and, based on preset space sensors, quickly decide to move out the way. The robot can also walk, run backwards, hop on one or two legs continuously. Not only that, but Asimo isn't too bad at playing football either.
And then...
a higher credit score will give you the ability to take out medical loans, which will allow you to replace your white blood cells with new white blood cells, increasing your lifespan by 100 years. Do you really want to die when you're 80? Enjoy this beautiful world! Take out a medical loan and live to be 300!
Experian.
Yeah, Experian is going to let you live to be 300! I'm so sorry, I'm going to have to deny you this medical loan. We went through your credit card, your credit records. You only have a 640 credit score.
So sorry,
we won't be able to replace your blood today.
But I'm gonna die without the blood. I'm sorry. We need you to move on. Derek, will you please show Miss Swanson out to the waiting zone?
It's gonna be like people, like, you know how like you see like car commercials, which are the funniest things ever. Yeah. Because all a car is a fishing lure the bank is using to get a dumb person to get into debt.
It's terrible. It's gotten worse. It's getting worse every day.
But whenever you see a car commercial or you see
That's a great analogy.
It's the exact same thing
it's
that
a fishing lure.
They throw in front of the fish.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like
shiny.
It's like
moving.
Yeah, it's moving. And what goes along with the package of a car commercial, it's never just a car. They never just show a car four wheels, great radio, here's the engine. It's a lifestyle. It's you're always in there with that young family. You're starting your family. You're with your beautiful wife.
She's ambiguously ethnic and has perfect cleavage.
Ambiguously ethnic, and God, she's so, so happy, and you're so happy, and this is
that
it.
A Vampire Weekend concert at Trader Joe's happening?
The doors are opening to your new married life with your beautiful wife and your beautiful car that you're going to drive your baby around in.
This is the day. This is the day that you're looking for. It's right now, right here in a Nissan.
Making it happen. You're a man. Opening doors wherever you can.
Opening these doors and stepping into a Nissan tonight, baby.
Safe and fun and hip. And so it's a fishing lure, but you're gonna see commercials in the future where it's like a family at a medical loan a building where it's like, they accepted our loan. We're going to live to be 300. Mm-hmm. Where you're sitting with your daughter at the table and you're like, good news, honey. We had our white blood cells replaced today. Mm-hmm. And your dad, mommy and daddy are going to live to be 300.
Great.
Medical loans. You're going to live to be 300. We can make the payment on a 300-year loan solo. Yes, it's $500 million for this treatment, but over the course of 300 years, you can't afford not to. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's going to happen. It's going to start because you've already got the fact that there's a commercials right now for Experian. There's a commercial. Like, what are they selling? They're not selling anything. There's a commercial. There's also, you see commercials for oil companies now. Like, commercials that are goodwill campaigns for oil companies.
Yeah, those are always curious to me. Mm-hmm. Like, those are just PR campaigns because they have so much money. They're just like, yeah, let's just do some PR work.
Hate us, Les.
But the Experian commercial and the credit commercials and the free credit report commercials and all of those commercials are a kind of propaganda designed to enforce the notion that what makes a person good or functional is not their ethics or morals, but their ability to repay debt and their ability to have like a disciplined spending habits.
There's a really, really great funny book. Maybe we talked about it before. We talked about this before. A super sad true love story. God, I think it's by Gary Shinehart.
I don't think so.
It's so funny. It's funny like Grand Theft Auto is funny, but it's also about sort of near future in New York City where credit is the most important thing and longevity. It's based on like Kurzweil and based on Aubrey de Grey's idea of like living forever through special chemicals and stuff. It's such a funny book. It's hilarious, but it's also kind of scary because everything he writes about seems so plausible and so capable of becoming an actual thing in the near future, like in our lifetime. The idea of like credit, these polls you walk by that project your credit score when you walk by.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. That's cool. You know, man, death is bedtime for humans in the same way when it's time for the baby to go to bed at 7, the parents come in and put the baby to bed. And in the same way, as humans evolve and as our species continues to be on the planet, it makes sense that our bedtime is being extended as we we get older. We're getting a extra hours to watch late night TV, and eventually it does make sense that once the human species goes from its teen years into adulthood, the curfew will be completely lifted, and going to sleep will no longer be a requisite but an option, where you decide that you've had enough of this particular node of the simulator and you're ready to go back into oblivion. That's going to happen for sure, man. Right. And definitely the division is going to be a socioeconomic division.
Oh yeah,
I mean, for sure.
It's already happening. It's going to get more extreme. Like H.G. Wells' book Time Machine. That makes more and more sense. The idea that there's two classes and the elites are basically idiots living above ground, just dining on fruit and living in waterfalls, where they have like this slave class of underlings under the ground.
Well,
it's obviously heavily exaggerated.
But it becomes more awful because humans will become less than slaves in the sense that it will be so
inefficient. They won't be slaves. It would be nothing.
So inefficient to have a slave when you have the new IBM made Android with downloadable updates where you can teach the thing to, like, host a Scrabble game or
make tea. Yeah, it's worse than a slave. Because people become, like, nothing irrelevant. More than their flesh, even.
Irrelevant. Yeah. They become basically...
Dog food.
Irrelevant. Well,
maybe dog food.
They become
best dog food.
They become not the physical labor becomes something that is
unnecessary. It's not valuable.
It's no longer valuable, but there will be worth. There will be things that have value. It just won't be the ability to haul boxes all day long. It's going to be other things.
A cachet.
Yeah.
And hair swirl.
Yeah, it's going to be, they call it a new renaissance. It's a kind of like dystopian renaissance that we're looking at, where modes of self-expression become the what's valuable. Your ability to articulate yourself in creative ways or to create novelty in the world and invent things and bring things into the world, it will become incredibly valuable.
Time after time, if you fall, I will catch you, I'll be waiting. Time after time. What is it that gives time meaning? Is it the denotation that us humans can express it as? Or rather, the warped feeling of the fourth dimension that can stretch on for ages, even in just minutes? The lazy man sits on the beach, mind wandering. The sand, a silicate sea, caresses the man's toes as he ponders of his own existence in time and space. Thoughts of parallel universes, extra dimensions, ludicrous ideas that reside in the mind of this man. Looking out to the ocean, he breaks his gaze, looking left, looking right, seeing nothing but an endless expanse of sand and ocean, merging carelessly and endless as time. How do we dissociate time from feelings, memories, nostalgia? It seems that these are all connected. The drunken beggar reflects back to memories of playing as a child in the cool grass under shady trees and asks himself, what is time? Such an abstract thought time is, a little whim theorized to be fundamental to the universe itself. A finite object is time, or perhaps everlasting? We may never know.
John Titor claims to be a time traveler from the year 2036, and his time machine kind of looks like a certain DeLorean, whose parts you can actually buy? Vsauce! Kevin here. This is Mindblow, Time Travel Edition. This is a real time machine. Sort of. Dr. Ronald Mallett's time machine is a spiral of incredibly powerful lasers, and he wishes to send a particle down it on a space-time altering ride into the past. Unfortunately, it hasn't worked out yet, and no visitors from the future have arrived. Isaac Newton thought time was like an arrow flying in a straight line. Albert Einstein, however, thought of it like a river, flowing around stars, speeding up and slowing down. In fact, he theorized the rate at which time passes depends on how fast you're going. So someone orbiting the Earth at the speed of light would actually alter time-space, and when they return to Earth, they will be in the future. His theory was right. Satellites orbiting the Earth actually have to alter their clocks to synchronize with Earth time because of this scientific fact. Check out this clock example. Hold it still, and the clock ticks at a normal pace. Move the clock, and the ticks take longer. Therefore, if you were in a ship aboard the Green Orb, your space-time would be different from the time of the guy holding the clock. Unfortunately, we can't go nearly fast enough in spaceships to make a noticeable time change. But we could hop a ride on the Black Hole Express. Spinning us at incredible speeds like this coffee spins this bean, we'd surely end up in a different time. But no one seems to have a black hole handy. So instead, Stephen Hawking has worms. Wormholes, to be exact. These are tunnels connecting massive distances by bending space-time. Like two holes on a piece of paper being folded together. Wormholes exist in a teeny tiny place called quantum foam, and we have no idea how to enlarge them enough for a human to pass through, let alone a TARDIS. The grandfather paradox arises when you travel into the past and kill your grandfather, thereby never being born and never being able to travel into the past to kill your grandfather. David Deutsch believes parallel universes exist, so you could go back in time to an alternate world without affecting the one you came from. In which case, you could go back and shoot a dinosaur in the face and your grandpa will be fine. I'm gonna leave you with a riddle. I'm the beginning of the end and the end of time and space. I'm essential to creation and I surround every place. What am I?
My name is Sam Small and I'm from the future. Let me explain. I'm standing over six of my own dead bodies, one for each time that I've travelled. There's me as a woman. The first time I travelled time, I went to see my parents when they were young. Some years later, when I was born in that timeline, I came out a lady. I don't know what changed, but it must have been significant. Always did make a pretty hot lady, though kinda did think I would, so no surprises there. The second time I travelled time, I met old mum when she was pregnant with me. A strange feeling seeing a bump that I used to occupy. I said hello. Asked her if she was excited for the pregnancy. She said she was. They'd been trying for a while and thought I might have been impossible. She asked what my name was. I said, you don't want to know. She said that I looked familiar. I said, I'm sure we'll meet soon. That changed me again. Made me taller, broader. I look a lot more like my father than my mother. I don't know what part of these meetings made each of these changes. It's not an exact science, but I continued to travel. The third time I travelled time, I went back to the beginning, right to the beginning, trying to prove that God never existed. I did meet a carpenter called Jesus, but I didn't see any miracles. He said it was timing. It was my own fault for getting there late, but it's okay if you missed him, because his 12 pals over there are writing a book about him. He said it didn't matter. Even if I had seen him, I'd still want more proof. He said, I love you, Sam, and I know you've travelled a long way, but sometimes you've just got to have faith. I guess some things never change. The fourth time I travelled time, things started to go wrong. I met myself from the future when I was in the past. It was the version of me that I changed when I met Jesus. He said I'd really f*** up the planet. Said World War II never ended. The Beatles never happened. The synthesizer, the drum machine, and the laptop weren't invented. The only place techno now exists is in your memory and imagination. We need to bring everyone back. Reset civilization. I said, but how? And he said, you are exactly where you want to be. You don't have to go back in time and change history. If you wanted to be a scuba diver, you'd have a tank on your back and you'd be underwater. If you wanted to be a doctor, you would have tried harder in fourth year. If you wanted to be married, you would have popped the question. If you wanted to be sober, then you would have stopped drinking. If you want to know where you came from, you would have asked your parents. And if you wanted to be a poet, you'd be reading a story about time travel to the internet. Now you have to travel time again. Explain the plan to me in the past so I can tell you, then round up all the versions of us and trick them so they kill themselves. You think you can handle that? I said, hell yes! And you've already seen how that ended at the start, but the last time I travelled time, I never made any changes. I just went to the very end of civilization. I saw how we reacted as the sun swallowed us up as it ended. Took a while to find us because we've been living on Mars for the past 1,000 years. Didn't talk to anyone, didn't look up my great-great-great to the power of 1,000 grandson, didn't go to any gigs, even though the Rolling Stones were still touring, doing one last reunion to the population of the moon. I just wanted to remind myself how small I really am. We're just a tiny blue dot on a big black map. Everyone you've ever loved, known or hated, every war, every death, every fresh newborn baby is just half a pixel on the screen that is this universe. Because no matter what you see, man, you'll always need more proof. The entire works of William Shakespeare can fit on one e-book. Sometimes you've just got to believe that what you're doing is good. And I love you, man. I know you've travelled a long way, but sometimes you've just got to have faith.
Nyctophobia is the fear of the dark. But there's another fear that's more chilling. It's the fear that darkness will go away. Optophobia, the fear of opening your eyes. Light travels at the fastest speed possible for a physical object. Darkness is erased when light appears and returns when light leaves. The speed of dark is the speed of light, but there are other types of darkness that can move faster than light speed. For instance, a shadow. Across a distance, a shadow can become much larger than the object creating it, but still mimic its source, moving in the same way for the same amount of time. So when a shadow is bigger than the object casting it, it moves a greater distance when the object moves, but in the same amount of time. Make a shadow large enough, and it can travel across a surface faster than light. If you, here on Earth, cast a shadow onto the moon, not an easy thing to do, but pointed from, say, point A on the moon's surface, and then you moved your finger so that the shadow moved to point B, your finger would only move a few centimeters in a fraction of a second, but the shadow it cast on the moon would move thousands of kilometers in the same amount of time. Do it right, and you're easily producing a shadow that breaks the light barrier. But nothing's wrong here. The rule is that information can't travel faster than light. You can't cause something to happen somewhere else faster than light could travel from you to that somewhere else. And our superluminal shadow is transferring no information from point A to point B. Sure, point B is being cast into darkness sooner than a light speed message from A could warn him it's coming, but darkness isn't traveling from point A to point B. It's traveling from you to point A and point B at the speed of light. What we tend to call a shadow is really just a cross-section of a three-dimensional region. The darkness you are causing only changes shape when newly unblocked light fills the previous gap. That's all a shadow is, a gap. So in a way, a shadow doesn't travel at all. That's an illusion caused by us thinking that a shadow is a physical thing, when in reality, a shadow is just the lack of physical things, photons, which chug along at the speed limit of the universe. But that doesn't mean two shadows can't kiss, or at least look like they are. Watch as Guy brings two shadows near each other. Right before they actually make contact, the shadows seem to magically bulge toward one another in a sort of smooch of darkness. What's going on is the shadow blister effect, and it has to do with the anatomy of a shadow. The region where an object completely blocks a light source is called the umbra. It's the darkest part of a shadow and the most prototypical part of the shadow. Where only a portion of the light source is blocked, we find the fainter penumbra. But as two or more penumbras approach and overlap, the combined amount of light they block can be enough to produce a perceivable difference, the shadow blister. The Earth has a big umbra. It's 1.4 million kilometers long. That's how far away you'd have to be from the Earth for it to no longer have a large enough apparent diameter to block out all of the sun. Here on the surface of Earth, we are nowhere near that far away, which is why night is so umbral. Night is just the Earth's shadow falling on you. A you eclipse. Sunsets are cool. They're beautiful to look at, but look the other way and you can see the lumbering shadow of our planet. Our atmosphere scatters shorter wavelengths of light more than longer wavelengths, which makes the sky appear blue. But in Earth's shadow, there's less light to scatter and the sky appears darker. During twilight, you can see the demarcation. While driving east from Denver to Kansas City, I got a particularly great view of it. This is Earth's approaching night-making shadow. The beautiful pink band above it, that's the belt of Venus. It's caused by the sky reflecting the colors of the sunset behind us. You've probably noticed that right after the sun sets and disappears from view, there's still light in the sky, scattered from the no longer visible sun. This is what we call twilight, and there are many different stages of twilight. If the sun is less than 6 degrees below the horizon, it's technically civil twilight. You can still do plenty of stuff outdoors without the need for artificial lights. Down to 12 degrees below the horizon, we have nautical twilight. Artificial lights are more or less necessary, but the sky still scatters enough light to be bright enough for ships at sea to navigate by seeing a contrast at the horizon between dark sea and faintly lit sky. Down to 18 degrees, an astronomical twilight is occurring. It looks like night, but the sky can still get darker. Until astronomical twilight ends, not all nighttime astronomical observations can be made. Below 18 degrees is technically, honestly, night. If you live at greater than 48.5 degrees north or south latitude, during the summer, the sun never goes more than 18 degrees below the horizon. It's never technically night. Places like London only reach astronomical twilight at the most during these months. So if you live in one of these areas and you want to avoid doing something during the summer, just tell people you'll do it tonight. You'll buy yourself a few weeks. But that's slow darkness. Let's cut to the chase because we are looking for fast darkness. When scissor blades snip, the intersection point between both blades moves faster than the blades themselves. Think of it this way. If you had a pair of scissors with blades that were a light year long, and it took 1 second to close them, the intersection point would have traveled an entire light year in not a year, but a second. No laws are being broken here because such a snip would be physically impossible. As I've mentioned before, rigid objects don't move instantaneously all over when a push force is applied to them. Instead, that force moves via electromagnetic forces from one atom to the next and so on down the line, a compression wave that travels at the speed of sound through the material. But what if we ignored that problem by allowing the blades to simply be separately already in motion? Well, their point of intersection can still travel faster than light because it's not a physical thing. It's just a geometric point, and it carries no more information than you could already gather by witnessing the approaching blades. But don't count out that geometric point of intersection just yet. It's the key to another type of darkness that can move faster than light. When waves collide, their crests can fuse into larger crests, their troughs into larger troughs. This is constructive interference. But crests colliding with troughs cancel out. Destructive interference. If these waves are light, the result is darkness. And in certain circumstances, darkness created this way can travel like the intersection between two lines, faster than light. Imagine these concentric circles as waves of light. The lines are wave crests, and the gaps in between are troughs. When they meet, the points where they intersect flee up and down faster than the waves travel, especially in the middle, which in the case of light waves makes them faster than light. The superluminal speeds of these dark patches can be seen really clearly if we make the wave crests of one source black as well as the background. Overlapping regions where red peeks through represent destructive interference, darkness. And you can see how, especially in the middle, this darkness races up and down faster than the waves. In 1995, a man named MacArthur Wheeler robbed a bank in Pittsburgh. He was caught because his only disguise was lemon juice. He covered his face with it. He knew that lemon juice could be used as an invisible ink when writing on paper revealed by heating. And he knew so little about why that worked, and he knew so little about how cameras worked, that he assumed with extreme confidence that lemon juice could make him invisible too. Seriously, Wheeler is an extreme example and was the inspiration for the Dunning-Kruger effect. Novices, people unskilled in particular disciplines, will often overestimate their knowledge and abilities in said disciplines because they don't even know how little they know, how much more there is to learn. On the flip side, experts in particular fields will often underestimate their knowledge, have less confidence in their abilities, or think that everyone else has the same level of knowledge that they do. What drives the Dunning-Kruger effect is the fact that often, the more you learn about something, the more you realize just how rich and complex and overwhelming and full of as-of-yet-unanswered questions it really is. George Bernard Shaw once famously toasted Albert Einstein by saying, "Science is always wrong. It never solves a problem without creating 10 more." Einstein didn't exactly disagree. He used geometry to illustrate how ignorance grows faster than knowledge, saying, "As our circle of knowledge expands, so does the circumference of darkness surrounding it." Learning, studying, shedding light on a field of inquiry also reveals just how in the dark we continue to be, how many shadowy things there are left for us to illuminate. The diameter of light never exceeds the shadowy circumference. But what's the speed of that kind of dark? The speed of the growth of the number of things we know we are in the dark about? What's the speed of ignorance? If we define ignorance as the difference between questions we know to ask and answers we have, the field of agnotology, the study of ignorance, suggests that the amount of things we know we are in the dark about is growing faster than the amount of things we have shed light on. Is it a coincidence that the phrase "in the dark" originated during, of all ages, the Age of Enlightenment? When Leeuwenhoek put a scraping from his tooth under a collection of magnifying lenses he built, he saw, for the first time in human history, little moving creatures, microorganisms. He called them animalcules. The discovery shed light on why food spoiled. Life didn't spontaneously come from old meat. It was already there, we just couldn't see it. But the discovery also showed us that we were in the dark about an entirely new realm of biology. As Philippe Bourdieu has poetically put it, enlightenment leads to benightedness. Science entails nescience. What's really cool about the expanding size of our nescient circumference is what Stuart Feierstein, the chair of biological sciences at Columbia University, has said about it. It is there that science begins, where the facts run out, just beyond them. He says, "It is a mistake to bob around in the circle of facts instead of riding the wave to the great expanse lying outside the circle." If science is a road trip, facts are the photos we take along the way. The fuel that drives it forward is ignorance. Facts? More like facts. Part of the past, not the way forward. When it comes to understanding our world, knowing why is obsolesced by asking why. Knowing facts makes you bright But the equally quick, sometimes quicker, and most rewarding prize is the dark. In admitting that you don't know everything, but that you'd like to know some of it.
Wasting time, buying time, spending time or trying to borrow some time. But these days, time is money. I heard somebody say that money is time. Now, money doesn't grow on trees, but it is the root of all evil, my mother always said. People who have a lot of money seem to have all the time in the world, don't they? But money isn't everything. Time is of the essence. And essentially, in order to get more time, I got to have lots of money. But in order to get more money, I gotta spend time. So time is the most valuable currency. I would like to share time, but I have no spare time, not even time enough to make change or change the world or change my mind. Time is running out. There's never enough time. Getting a college degree takes too much time and costs too much money. So kids do crimes and end up locked up serving time for stealing money, doing hard time for about the same amount of money it would cost to get them a college degree. But meanwhile, outside the prison gates, hunger eats away at the walls of a child's stomach. Daddy worked overtime this week, but the company accountant took some well-deserved time off to get in some tea time and time with the kids. You'll get your check in due time. Meanwhile, I'm standing in the lunch line trying to find a moment to write a rhyme, and I find myself sneaking off to the men's room to steal a few minutes of my boss's time, realizing I'll probably never have enough time, because when I signed that dotted line, I signed away all my free. So now my time exists before 9 and after 5, and some nights I was there way past 9, so I never had time to spend with my friends. And though I was chasing the Benjamin, somehow I never had any ends to spend when we finally did carve out a few minutes from our busy days. And then we would simply coalesce around a common thread and coexist inside the haze, whiling away the minutes, discussing the disgusting parts of our dismal existences, punching in, punching out, serving time. Prisoners, trapped inside the hourglass, choking on the sandstorm of possibilities, wishing we could all go back in time and remind ourselves to take the time to appreciate the gift of time. And right now, through all the timeouts, the time on stage, the studio time, the time and time again, bad timing, the absent-minded time spent wondering, will I get my peak break this time, or should I just throw in the towel and resign and get back on my grinding, talking all up the wasted time, trying to make up for lost time. Just yesterday, y'all, I looked up in the sky and I saw a sign. Technology, education, entertainment, design. An organization dedicated with ideas in mind. And I thought, well, it's about time.
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
Thank you.
Now, go find the others. .com.
Wait, I... Ding, ding, ding. Uh-oh, looks like we're out of time. Goodbye.